Okay, well, I will be your last speaker of the day. It's a pleasure for me to give you all a little preview of a project that I've been working on for the last 3 years or so. It's a feature-length documentary film entitled Between Earth and Sky, and this project is financially underwritten by the Soil Science Society of America, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, Texas Tech University, and the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Several of you in the room have heard about this and, you know, little snippets here and there. Maybe you've watched a couple of our trailers on our website, betweenearthandskymovie.com. This has been an unbelievable learning experience for me because I've never made a film before. And when they asked me, hey, would you like to be executive producer of this project, I didn't even know what that meant. But now, several years into the project, I know what an executive producer does, and it was quite a bit of work, and there's a lot of people in this room to thank, among them Nick Jelinski, Bogdan Duda, and several others who worked on this project. Where we're at with the film right now is it is complete, it is 1 hour and 20 minutes in length, and it is currently being shopped around at about a dozen different film festivals, both domestically as well as internationally. Those include Sundance, South by Southwest, Big Sky, the Environmental Film Festival in our nation's capital, Colorado Environmental Film Festival, True False, on and on and on. Berlin, is one of the international festivals. On Wednesday of this week, I'll be leaving to go to Marrakesh, Morocco at the invitation of the U.S. State Department to present outtakes of the film at the COP22 International Climate Talks. And so we were really honored to have that level of recognition of the work. So the film is directed by Emmy Award-winning director Paul Allen Hunton, and we have an original musical score that's been composed for the entire film, animations, and that sort of thing. So I can't show you the whole film right now because of the rules of the film festivals. They want the film festival who selects us wants it to be the world premiere. And so the best I can do is show you a little 15-minute outtake. So rather than doing like a mashup trailer kind of thing of little snippets, this is an actual 15-minute complete cut from the film. I hope you enjoy.
So I view it as one of the most important natural resources that we have, and one of the most underappreciated.
Creating soil more gently is something I think that we all kind of can do a better job of. We tend to use it as a dumping ground. When we put in a landfill, we scrape all the dirt off, we put in a landfill, we put that dirt over top, and the dirt went back on top, not the same dirt that left, it doesn't have the same characteristics. That's changed, and it takes a long time for it to move.
So compost is soil which, simply speaking, soil that will not thaw for at least 2 years. More kind of scientific definition based on temperature. And it says that any earth material which is at or below 0 degrees Celsius for 2 or more consecutive years, that is compost.
In the Arctic, a lot of infrastructure, roads, rail lines, even airports, homes, buildings, a lot of infrastructure is built on what we call permafrost, or permanently frozen ground. In the Arctic, it's so cold that even when it gets above freezing in the summer, the ground still stays frozen. And it provides a very solid foundation for our buildings, for our oil pipelines, for our infrastructure.
And there's plenty of it in Alaska. There's different types of permafrost. Areas where you'll find it everywhere is continuous permafrost. Areas where you'll find patches of it, just discontinuous permafrost more in the Fairbanks interior area.
Arctic soils are fragile soils. They're fragile ecosystems. They've evolved over hundreds of thousands of years, and it's very much a niche community. The ice that is found within those soils might limit the plant root depth penetration for some plants, but others it's not a problem for. So it's a very uniquely adaptive ecosystem.
If you build a structure, like a house, over permafrost, that you're not going to live at below freezing in your house, you're going to have it pretty warm. And so that heat goes everywhere away from that house, including into the ground. So when you have heat penetrating into the subsurface, it will thaw the permafrost perhaps under the center of the house faster or to a greater depth than around the corners. So you get settlement and your house sags down in the middle. And so there's been a lot of houses that, in the Fairbanks area, you can see a lot of structures where this has been the effect, and they're not level anymore. Some of them are condemned. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of resources.
We're standing on a section of the Glen Highway. We're in the zone of discontinuous permafrost. Permafrost underlies most of the landscape here, with the exception of large water bodies and other rivers. And here, the temperature of the permafrost is very warm. We're sitting precariously right at the melting point. This area is real susceptible to surface alterations that change the thermal properties of the surface of the vegetation. So anything we do in this environment to alter the thermal regime can easily cause melting of the permafrost. This section of the road that we're on here is a prime example of that alteration. The black surface of the asphalt conducts a lot of heat into the ground and causes the permafrost to melt. Now, this is big because with our climate changing and our air temperature starting to rise, this sort of a phenomenon is going to become more common. And there are estimates for interior Alaska that we're going to spend an additional $2 to $6 billion in just maintenance on these, the roads in interior Alaska and the buildings that occur on this permafrost as it starts to warm up and it starts to degrade. So this is a pretty good example of what to expect across this landscape with warming temperatures.
If you can't quantify your resources, if you don't know how much carbon is in the soil and how much carbon and methane is in the permafrost, how will you be able to calculate the impact if there is change?
So we have to know what the resource base is before you can make policy decisions. And this area is not one that would have much of an agricultural impact if we don't know the soils. It would be more so that we would be losing carbon and emitting methane over vast areas, and we would not even be aware of it. If someone doesn't know that there's a problem, there is no problem. If you can quantify it for them, then they can make a decision. And soil survey is the absolute best way to provide that resource information to legislators and administrators and people that can make broad scale decisions that would make a lasting change, a real change.
I think in 1985, 26, I did my first one. That was at the interior house locally. And gradually expanded that to southeastern Alaska, Juneau, Ketchikan area, a couple times. Then in 92, I decided, I'm in Alaska with all permafrost. I decided to shift my program from south central Alaska north to the permafrost region. So then from 93, I had my first field trip.
Some of Chinlu's work, the research that he's conducted, the different dynamics across the landscape, the variability that we've seen in Arctic soils, an entire new soil order was created with multiple suborders underneath that. And he's really helped to define a lot of the variability, the different features of Arctic soils, what they can be used for, how they're described, and even unique types of testing that we do in the laboratory or in the field for describing these Arctic soils. Because again, it's very different than what we do in the lower 48. We've been really fortunate with Chinlu being here because he's a very motivated, unselfish individual in terms of his science. And he encouraged a lot of young scientists to pursue a career in soil science and has instilled in them the importance of knowing this resource. We were figuring the other day that Chinlu has had over 500 students that have traveled up the hallway to look at Sahara and Arctic soil.
Chinlu's published tons of papers, and so he hasn't published everything that's in his head, but I can at least go back and read some of what he thought and said. A little bit less is true with people that work on soil survey. They don't get, you know, they're not academics, so they don't have as much of a chance to lead his paper trail, which is a huge problem because a lot of times those are the people that know the most about a particular landscape, and they can tell you, you know, hey, Mark, be out here with Mark, and he'll say, yeah, you know, just over there, I think the soils look like this. And so really people who can read the landscape and understand what soils look like and how that may affect their use.
That guy has, what is it, 32 years of experience, I don't know, 15,000 holes. He's done, that's about stories, you know. I mean, I can dig a hole, I can describe a hole, I can tell you what the processes are, but he's got, like, 15,000 stories that have been told, and it's like, you know, invaluable. I'm just so grateful that they're both here and they're both available, and I plan on picking their brains until they no longer accept phone calls.
It's really the ability to run this tour, show students firsthand the, not just the soil resources, but the potential impact on those resources. It was one of the reasons that this tour stops in places where soils have been impacted, where permafrost has melted away. Even my experience on this trip is that we dug a soil that had permafrost in it every single year until the year I came, and that soil was permafrost free that year. So there have been changes just in the last 3 years on permafrost. The ability to show a student that firsthand, and then to teach them about the soil forming and soil dynamic properties and behaviors on site is just essential. If they decide that this is something that they have passion for, then they will be the next generation of researchers, scientists, administrators, legislators, voters. And so it is vital that we show people these soils and these conditions and the potential destruction and impact that can occur when there's no regulation, when there's no oversight, when there's no concern being shown.
Since I've been in Alaska, I've noticed a lot of differences in the climate that has changed over that time that I've been here. Areas in the western part of the state that used to have permafrost, that permafrost was fairly sensitive to temperature change, and in the past 30 or so years, that permafrost has basically disappeared from the ground, and we've been able to document that based on certain characteristics that the soils have that tell us that the soil was wet and that it was frozen at the time. And both those characteristics are now gone in those permafrost-sensitive soils. If we start to lose interior Alaska's permafrost by the end of the century, we're looking at fully 20% of the carbon on the planet going from the terrestrial system into the atmosphere. That's huge in terms of temperature change.
They're not going to replace them at the university as much as I have heard. And I really feel that I wish they would. I think that's needed. We need some soil scientists at universities that can continue this research, that can continue the publications, that can continue taking pictures, that can go to professional meetings and teach people what they're seeing up here, tell them the story about the permafrost, how it's changing, the hydrology, the vegetation, what they see, the impacts of the pipeline. All of this is really important, so it's going to be a big loss for soil science.
All right. Well, there you've got a little 15-minute clip. Okay. There's lots of different ways that you're going to be able to see this, and let me just give you a teaser on that. Of course, we're looking at these different film festivals, and we're issuing press releases and stuff like that. The next stage after that will be to look at distribution, and we've already had some talks with PBS World, who's very interested in putting it out over the PBS network. Later on in 2017, we'll be looking at streaming services, so you should be able to find this on Netflix, Hulu, downloaded from iTunes, those kinds of places. Coming out of the film festivals, we don't want to jinx ourselves, knock on wood, but if we were to win something for this, we might have somebody like a Discovery Channel, Nat Geo, somebody like that come along that might look to distribute it on their networks as well, just depending on how things go. So in addition to that, we're also in the process of cobbling together a college and university / interested community tour. And right now we have Oklahoma State, who's already signed on, Southwestern University, Dickinson State. Others who have expressed strong interest include Auburn, LSU, Colorado State, Oregon State. The list goes on and on. So what this involves is basically the university saying, hey, we want to host a screening of this, maybe even a panel discussion about these issues. Maybe broadcasting this, advertising on their local NPR affiliate, course, every good movie's got to have a movie poster. We have a beautiful one produced. We can send to you to print off and put up it around the university. But the idea is we want to get this word out in the community. It's great to be talking to scientists about it, but I'm kind of preaching to the choir. We need to get the message out to the general public, and that's really what this film is designed to do. So those of you who have an interest in hosting a screening, it's as simple as shooting me an email, david.weindorf@ttu.edu. Just Google betweenearthandskymovie.com, go out to the website. You'll certainly be able to find my contact information. I'll be glad to put something on the calendar for you, and we can get that lined up. We're looking to do this inexpensively. We don't want this to be a huge financial burden on the hosting institution, so we're just looking to make it as inexpensive as possible to make it really look top-notch and do a good job with it. So if you're interested, please let me know. That wraps up our session for today. Thank you guys for attending. Let's have a great week.